Kia ora, Luke. Welcome to the podcast. I'm so excited, as you know, to interview you today. Definitely someone I look up to in the finance space, business space, all of the things. So I'd really love to just get started by learning more about who you are, where you come from, and what started Keep the Change.
Nice. So I'm a Dannevirke lad originally and small town, which I'm sure many people can relate to. And then I went to Palmerston North Boys High. And I think my money journey probably started around 16, 17, where I started studying economics and accounting, found that relatively interesting and had my first exposure to shares. So I went and brought some shares at 17. And that's probably, when before people even realize you could do it, because a lot of people think, we haven't had access and now we do with the likes of Sharesies and generating different ways to do it. But I was determined to find a way. However, I wasn't really investing. I was day trading, well, not day trading, but I was buying and then I would sell and I was just looking for ways to make a bit of money. But I was really interested in that, and I was already earning money at that stage with various jobs, working in a meatworks, doing a junk mail run, working in a four square. So yeah, I've been working from a very early age and always been fascinated by money and business. I then went on to Massey University, studied business and accounting, and got going on a traditional accounting path until I really, leant into my entrepreneurship, which I know is something you talk about a lot in your book, which is cool to see and encourage more people to do. And finally sort of created my own path and built my own business and have gone out and yeah, done that. And in that time have built that off of the back of creating content, educating people, providing goodwill, and eventually, clients come to you. So that had been the strategy for Next Advisory, which is the brand sitting in the background. And then during lockdown, I had a bit more time on my hands. And so I started writing more for everyday Kiwi people about financial literacy. I knew podcasting was a thing. So I then started reading some of the written blogs that I'd done as a podcast. Then that led to interviewing. And basically, I didn't know what I was doing. I was just constantly figuring it out as I go, is hopefully the takeaway for people that now sort of see me where I am. I started with zero followers, zero listeners, zero email addresses, and just got going and things happen.
Oh, I love this so much, and it's so relatable about, getting started and those, hustle jobs and doing those types of things. So that's really incredible, and I think that your journey is super inspiring for people because of that like grassroots beginning story. But one of the things that I really love about your journey is that you've grown one of the most successful podcasts, money podcasts in New Zealand. And there's a few things I noticed about your podcast. You're super consistent, high value content. Are there any other secrets that underperforming podcasters are missing?
I think like trying to get a sense of what your audience wants, and also like one thing that becomes quite hard, I've been doing this for a number of years now, and as I've done that, I've become more financially successful because I'm going on my journey, is that I'm now so much further ahead than probably people finding me if they found me 5 years ago. So then I know that I probably seem less relatable. So I'm trying to go back and give examples of here's where I was 5 years ago, or I was in debt, to try and bring people back to, oh wow, because it's so easy in this day and age to look at the person with the abs or the person that just ran the half marathon or the person with the money or they got the boat or they got this and think, I want to be at that step. And we don't know what happened in the years before. So it's really cool to take the early people on the journey, but I'm trying to remind myself, what, how can I, bring in a new wave of people, but not have them go, oh, well, that's, I can't relate to that guy anymore because it's just too far ahead.
No, that's so true, and I think one of the that's one thing that I really like about your posts and your social media and everything is because I can really, relate to a lot of things that you're talking about. So that's super awesome. One of the things that I saw you recently post was about becoming a millionaire. Was this always the goal? How can you talk me through this and what was the journey like?
Yeah, I think so. I think, unpacking some of my earlier childhood, and I think that's where we start to learn some of the things about money. I think I sort of saw some struggle around money in my household, and then different, families doing well and others not, and us having secondhand clothing and others not. And just kind of once you start learning about economics and accounting and business, you start to learn more about money. So naturally you then like, oh, okay, that's why that family can do that. Oh, they're in farming, and farming, oh, okay, can be quite profitable. And so you start to you start to unpack it and it becomes a lot more transactional. But I think I was, probably chasing a bit of, oh, I want to have money so I can provide for people, or I can do things that I haven't been able to do, or I want to, not feel stressed about money because I've seen money causing stress, for instance. So I was sort of chasing it for my own reasons. And I think that people just pick the million figure as sort of, it's probably like quite culturally like a big achievement, but a million's not what it used to be, but very early on for me, it was, if I could earn $100,000 in my accounting career a year, I thought, wow, like I'll probably have so much money that I'll probably only do maybe 5, 6, 10 years of it, invest some money, and then maybe retire. I don't know. But obviously, we've all learned a lot about inflation over the last 5 or so years, and you realize that, wow, what was 100 grand when I was coming out of university is not what $100,000 is today, and what $1 million of assets is not what, $1 million was back then. But also, when a lot of people talk about being a millionaire, they talk about having $1 million worth of assets, but they might have $600,000 worth of debt. My goal was sort of, I wonder if I could do it. And I thought I could. So my goal was, can I build $1 million worth of assets and not have any debt, and be like a liquid millionaire, so to speak. But then you realize that that's then tricky because you'd have to then sell everything. So if you then sell everything and have it just sitting in a bank account, well then what's the point of that too? So you go on this incredible journey to do it. But really, I knew deep down that I was playing below my potential. So I did all the same sort of things that, a lot of us do, and I should have. I had the education that it was probably silly to do that. So, we're talking back then, these days we've got buy now, pay later, but you'd have finance cards and credit cards and consumer finance. And I was real keen on the debt world, but really, these things were going past me, like, oh, do you want to buy some Xero shares? Oh, I know I should do this because I'm watching Xero, turn into something in front of my eyes. Sorry, I'm paying Westpac back. I'm paying my credit card down. So it was frustrating the hell out of me. Like, I should know better. I do know better, but I can't do it and I can't get to it because I'm paying back the decisions that have led me down the wrong path. And so eventually I got to a point where I was like, I'm just gonna like put my head down, do well, stack money, and just see what it's like to be able to do that. And the millionaire thing should happen as I go about that journey.
That's so true about $1 million not being what it used to be. I think, I was 18 when I started multi-millionaire with this dream of becoming a millionaire one day. And I look back at it, that first thing, and I'm like, it's really not what it used to be, and it's not what I thought it was when I was 18. So really resonate with that quoted or that sentiment. One of the things that I heard you talk about growing up or seeing financial struggle, do you think that education was, the biggest piece of being able to break free from this or other things?
Yeah, I do. And I still probably, that's one of my core beliefs, that education can really change someone's life. But what I think happened is, like, education become going to school. But that is just one form of education. It doesn't mean someone's going to be financially literate. Like, I made a video recently about how a lot of intelligent people really struggle financially. And in the comments, you've got all these really intelligent people telling me, oh, exactly why.
Lawyers, doctors, all of
Yeah.
them.
But even like really intellectual people that have, like, they've studied everything and they want to tell you about, the global financial systems on 38 days away from this happening because of silver crossed over this chart with gold. And I've learned, and you're like, dude, you're broke, bro. What are you doing? Like, why didn't you take all of this education that you self-taught yourself and take some action with it? And they're like, oh, well, I wasn't in the position to be. Yeah, they've got another reason for that. So I believe that education in the hands of the right people can completely change their life beyond what they even thought possible. And that's basically like who I'm here for, those people who just need to get started, or they need to, the way I sort of articulate it sometimes is they're sitting in the stands and they're watching everyone else and they don't realize, like, you could be at the start line. This could be you. And then you've gone on your journey and then you get them to the start line. Then they go off on their journey and they come back to me 3 years later and they're like, wow, like here's what I've done. But their journey is very different to somebody else's. But it's all these Kiwi people sitting on the sideline that have sort of subconsciously believed or been, told that, like, it can't be them. And I think with the right education, it can be. But it takes action. So we can get someone to the start line, but if they don't start moving, and that's what I like about, you're constantly putting content out about like millionaires move, right? And it's like that people probably see it, and it, what probably what you maybe you're trying to say is that, you've got to keep your body moving, but it's the same in life. Like you've got to keep moving forward, and then the doing, clearing the debt then leads you to, oh, what do I do now that I don't have to clear the debt because I don't have those buy now, pay later repayments. And now what do I do with that money? Or I'm going to intentionally decide what to do rather than I have to pay buy now, pay later back. And so that movement creates more movement. So education, like, yes, but I do think, like, if you just gave everyone the same education, you'd still have all the same problems because most people just wouldn't take action on it. So it is education plus action.
So that's an interesting thing, actually. Do you think that having financial literacy taught in schools would create, much change, or what do you think on that?
Yeah, I think like everything's an experiment, in life. And I think we think that's the right thing to do. And part of it will be. But, let's be honest, if some kid goes home and goes like, oh, mum, dad, I've been learning about investing and it's I'm gonna start investing, and their mum's like, no, that's very risky. And your granddad once put $100 into this and they lost all of their money. And be like, oh wow, okay, so I'm gonna go back to school. I'm not into this lesson. Nah, I've heard it's real dangerous, it's real risky, it's a scam, oh, it's BlackRock. BlackRock own anything anyway. And so, I don't, yeah, it's a hard one. I think it'll be a net positive, but at the same time, like I sometimes think that more educated people, without educating people who won't take action, like we create another form of inequality. So then we'll just get frustrated by that anyway. So I guess another way to explain this would be, those of us who believe in KiwiSaver and contribute to KiwiSaver, and do that, and if that works out well for us over time, the people who didn't and who are currently like learning how to take their money out of KiwiSaver for an emergency when it's not genuinely an emergency, I'll just caveat that, like they'll end up pissed off at you and I that have then in the future done all of this and be like, oh, well, I had to take mine out in 2025 for this because I read it on TikTok that you can actually access it somehow. And I didn't know that, like that it actually was a retirement savings account and I shouldn't have been touching that. And it would have compounded to how much yours is compounded too. So that's what I mean by like everything's an experiment. And I think there'll never be like a perfect world of money because everybody has different beliefs and everybody has different priorities with that money. And at the end of the day, like we're all human and it's very easy to just like to not do the thing that we know we should do. But overall, I think financial literacy in schools would be a net positive for the country for sure.
Mean, love that too, and yeah, really agree with your whakaaro around that. You mentioned, playing below your potential, or seeing that you were, you had so much more potential and you just weren't kind of achieving that. What do you think? Because I think so many people resonate with this. I myself included. I actually started off meeting Luke and sharing that his podcast really inspired me to grow my podcast, because I saw, I could look at the output that he was doing compared to what I was doing, and I'm like, well, the results aren't the same because you're just not actually putting in the amount of work. So what do you think those like key things people need to do when they realize that they are playing below their potential? How do they actually shift that and start, achieving results?
Yeah, it's a really difficult one, right? Because it's a very individual journey. I think personally, I always had a lot of belief in myself, and I think I'd start there that, at some stage in our life, like we really did believe that we could do a lot and we could achieve a lot, and that, it was possible. And I'm talking, I thought I could play for the Warriors, I thought I could play for the Phoenix, I've believed a whole lot of shit that looking back, I probably shouldn't have had those beliefs. And they were delusional, but like at least I, and I would go to the, I would take balls to the, I wasn't even playing the league, and I would go to the paddock and I'd be trying to kick 40-20s. Like, well, what are you doing? Like,
So
and
funny.
so the belief is strong, but it's misguided. And I think if we can get a little bit of that belief back, then it's almost, and then you go looking for people that are doing it. Okay, well, if they are doing it, why not me? And you've identified in me, okay, a lot of volume, a lot of consistency. Okay, if I model that, then other things will probably happen for you that aren't happening for you. So then, I'm driving here today and I'm looking at someone with a boat. I'm thinking, how do they afford a boat? Like, I think I knew one person when I was growing up that had a boat. And I'm thinking, man, this dude's towing a boat and he's got like a inflatable boat on the back of that boat. And still I'm like, man, that must cost a lot to buy that boat. And I just don't know what that boat costs. But like they've made sense of it and they've figured out how to pay for the boat. They've figured out why that's important to them. And I think for a lot of us, like we've stopped doing that. We're just sort of, I think we had a real big period in New Zealand of go to school, go to uni. It reflects good on the school, get a safe job, that'll create a good form of income, buy a rental property, rinse and repeat that, and then you'll get the pension as well. You'll have some rental income coming in, you'll protect your money from inflation because house prices always go up, and just do that and just stop looking at anything else, just do that and chill out. And that's a path, but we were like, a lot of people should do that. Now to the point where if you try to say to someone like, oh, you could think about starting a business, not everyone can start a business. And you're like, where did you learn that? Or like, but maybe you could. Oh, but I've got kids, I've got a mortgage, I've got, it's like, yeah, because you got all of those things based on the path that you chose. So then we're going to have to figure out if you don't like it, if you don't like your job, well, do you want to do that for the rest of your life till you die? No. Okay. So we're going to have to find something else that we do want to do. So maybe we ended up on the wrong path, and that's so normal when we're younger, where it's like, Mom, I don't like swimming. Can I not do swimming? Can I do soccer instead? Oh, okay. You really enjoy that. We'll get you doing that. But in money and life, it's like, no, do this path, do this. Because I think that, like, a lot of us are being taught to go after comfort and safety. So, which makes a lot of sense. Because if I was a parent, and one day I will be, I'll probably be like trying to keep them safe too and show them, okay, what's comfortable. And, our parents have then seen things happening in the world that have, led them to go, okay, the job's probably you want a safe job and you want to do that for ages. Now you've got people that hate their jobs or like don't want to stay there that long. So I think that a lot of people are not even questioning what it is that they could be doing. And then if they believe that it was something bigger, then they would probably be forced to either change their path or accept that it's not going to be them. And maybe it's okay. Like if it's not going to be you've then got to figure, okay, how do I maximize this path? What risks could I be taking inside the path that I'm on that I'm not currently taking in order to be able to like speed up my journey? So yeah, I think it's probably a bit of a tangential answer there. But I just think like Kiwi people are so, yeah, we're actually like so innovative deep down, and so we're so valuable. And one thing that I learned like really early on, in business was, oh, I just, sell dumb shit to dumb people and you make a lot of money. And I was like, wow, that's crazy. No one does that. And everywhere I look, I'm like, oh, I get what they mean now. That's just, a silly product to people who are willing to give their money over for it and it works. And they do that in America and they do that in big markets. Whereas Kiwis, we're like, nah, man. Got to provide like heaps of value. Got to be like, oh, how much should I charge? Oh, we get stuck at all this other stuff because we're so scared that we're like ripping someone off or didn't do a good enough job. And we've got all this internal fear holding us back when really I think a lot of us are way more capable than we realize, but we just can't step into it.
That's so true, actually, about like the charging thing. I have a friend in business who, when she crossed 60K and, started paying GST, she had to increase her prices, obviously. And she was like, there were no restriction to people buying those things. And I was like, you literally could have charged that price like before you were GST registered. And she was like, yeah, I just, never kind of realized. So, one of the things I really hear you talk about is like your environment, and let's say seeing that boat and going like, oh my gosh, like, it's possible. And I use that in my life, I guess, like artificially creating it by, who I surround myself by on social media, like what accounts am I following, all of those types of things. Do you think that like your environment, if you're not physically in that space, there's still the potential to have those like positive impacts from social media, podcasts, all of those types of things? And how influential do you think that is to your wealth journey?
Oh, massive. And I think we're so lucky. And that's what we can't see is that for years, like you couldn't do that. You had to be really wealthy to go to Warren Buffett's like investment summit each year. And now it's like, oh, I'll watch it in 3 days on YouTube. Even, Metallica the other day, their concert was on YouTube, I think like 2 days after. Like someone's put it up there and you're like, okay. like the access we now have is incredible. And that's what I mean by education won't solve it alone, because people, we're now, we got an overwhelm of information. And so it's then, okay, how do I take that and do something with it? And I think that's why people really are valuing experiences, and that do people that do have money are wanting to taste that experience and feel it, to be like, well, I know I could watch it on YouTube, but I want to be there. And on the way here, I was listening to Jay Shetty and Tony Robbins. And like, I don't know them. They don't know I exist. I didn't pay to listen to it. I didn't pay to go and, sit there in the background, but they streamed it for me and I could take a couple of nuggets from it. So yeah, I do think like we need to be sharper on curating our, physical and our non-physical. So our online, even our inboxes, our social media, the content that we're listening to, the music that we're listening to, it seems normal we after a heavy breakup to go and listen to heaps of breakup music. Like, but we know deep down that's probably not going to help. But
No.
that's probably not
Wonder why
going
you're
to.
still heartbroken 2 years later.
So, it's a it's again, it's like it's gotten easier, but because it's gotten easier, maybe that's made it harder. Because then there's so much, TikTok never ends. YouTube, it'll feed you then another video to watch, and before you know it, you've done 4 hours of information and 0 minutes of action.
So I guess how do you know who are the people you want to listen to? If there's like so much out there, how do you kind of decide? Are there any like books that you've read that were really influential in your journey or specific podcasts? I know you mentioned Jay Shetty.
Well, I think just looking at people that have done things that you would like to do is a good way, is like a very good filter to start with, because you can fake a lot of shit online these days, right? But you probably can't, like eventually you can't. And the things that people have and the if and the way that they talk and the principles that they speak by, that's getting a bit deeper. But if you like really resonate with that, then good. But I think what a lot of people do is they try and find things that'll back up how they're currently feeling, and then keep listening to that, and then the algorithm keeps feeding them that, and they're like, oh, that's why I'm stuck, because I'm from a small town or I'm Māori or whatever. And it's like, but you either are happy with that and then are not going to change, but the reason that you're then frustrated is because you actually deep down do want something different, but you're not willing to change or accept that it could be done differently. And I think that's where, if we look to different people that have done things, then you can't, like they have to have actually, if they've actually done it, like there has to be a lesson in there. And even
Possibly.
my father-in-law to be the other day said to me, these days the information can just all be accessed on your phone, right? But in culture, we would be like, okay, respect your elders because they're very experienced. Now you can almost shortcut that because you're like, oh, well, like, okay, yeah, I still think it's good to respect your elders, right? But you maybe don't need to go to them to get the wisdom or the experience, because you can now find it online and really quickly. But I do think that then people will look that there's so much information. So then the people who have done things, will be really valuable. So, I heard a podcast host recently charge a four-figure amount for a few hours of podcast coaching. And you're not going to pay that to someone who's not really good at it and hasn't built heaps of podcast, episodes and done it really well and has seemed to be really successful, right? And you're not going to then just, oh, ring up someone from the Yellow Pages or whatever back in the day and be like, oh, I'll pay this random person $4,000. You're going to want to know, like, what have you achieved? What have you done? What are your outputs? And that's where I think we can study or keep an eye on people that have got like large output and who, can almost back up what they've done. And they're probably the people that we, want to be having in our environment.
Man, love this so much. One of the things I really wanted to chat about with you today is about accounting and some of those biggest tax mistakes that you see business owners making or even, people in general. And what are those like action steps people can take to become better?
Well, firstly, because a lot of us don't study accounting, I think we think it's like really hard, but it's actually part of why it's hard is because there's so many different definitions and words and it's a bit of a foreign language. So that's probably why it's hard, because it just feels unfamiliar. But accounting and tax is actually quite simple in New Zealand to a degree. Then it starts to become technical, but there are very good people to help people in New Zealand around the technical stuff. But one of the things that's always frustrated me is that people won't earn a second form of income because they believe that, you know, they're going to pay double tax or secondary tax, and it's this massive amount. And that one piece of misinformation or miseducation is holding back so many people from increasing their income because they believe, like, oh, I go into the top tax bracket. So in New Zealand, you're taxed on your total income. Doesn't matter if it's from one source or 10 sources, it all gets combined, and then the tax rates are the same for Sally, who makes 70 grand from one job, and Barry, who makes 70 grand from seven jobs, you know? So that there, I think, is a re like has been a big issue for a lot of New Zealand people. But probably, like, in business, there's, or once you start making a bit of money, people are like, oh, how do I decrease my tax bill? Well, someone once taught me you can spend, you know, a dollar to save 33 cents in tax, but normally it's a wasted dollar. So you just start blowing money to decrease your tax bill and buying stuff or business expenses that you don't really need. So often we're trying to educate clients or business owners about increasing your income or just getting out of that way of thinking, because yeah, it does, like, paying a lot of tax can suck, and I get it. But, you know, if you just think about, okay, how do I decrease my tax bill? You run the risk that you are, you know, again, just playing it small and not really thinking about, okay, the asset that you're building in terms of your business. But individually, like, there's not many things that an individual can claim outside of business. So income protection insurance is typically one thing that you may be able to claim. You might get someone to, what's that, sorry?
Donations as a personal individual?
Yeah. So if you make a donation, you get, you know, a third of that back. And so you've got to make sure that you're doing that claim. And often a lot of parents will be paying a donation to a school as well. So I once built a business to help parents claim back their school donations, and we refunded about $1 million back to parents, which is pretty cool. And again, same sort of thing, like lack of education. So they didn't know they could do it. I thought that was the problem. We'll teach them, we'll do it for them. They just didn't know they could do it. And when we educated them, like, great, thanks for that information on your website and in your live chat that I've just spent hours of my life creating, and I'm just going to go do it myself. So we were sort of left with the my food bag percentage of the customers that are like, okay, you do it for me. This is how I'd explain it. But we still refunded $1 million. So the government overall, I think, would have refunded through that few years where we were doing that, would have refunded, you know, millions to the parents who just then had that information. So donations and maybe someone preparing your tax return for you. You can, yeah, claim that as a tax deductible expense. But overall, like, the tax rules are there to incentivize behavior. So the reason that things can be claimed as an expense are that we then incentivize that behavior. So I guess to give a good example, I went to the tennis yesterday, right? And I took a client and I hosted him, and we were talking about business things and goals for 2026. The cost of that was a tax deductible expense to my business. If I went with a mate, it wouldn't be. I'll be paying for that with after tax income. So I would make my money, pay my tax, have my net amount, and then pay for my stuff. In business, I make my money, but part of my expense is having a, you know, kōrero at the tennis with this client, hosting them there, thinking bigger. Okay, how can we help you? Who else can we be helping? What are we doing? That becomes a tax deductible expense. Then I have my profit. Then I pay my tax on my profit. So if more people understood the business tax rules, I think it would be another one of those reasons that people go, ah, maybe I should learn more about this business thing. Maybe it could be me. Maybe I could have a go at it. And not everyone needs to build a bloody multi-million-dollar accounting practice or a podcast or a $1 billion business or whatever the stuff that we see online. It's literally, okay, how can you provide value to somebody and be really good at it? And then that's the sales. Then we have expenses to do that. Then we have profit to do that. And then we pay our tax on that. And it is very, very doable in this country.
I mean, love this so much. And I think one of my mistakes was not really educating myself from the beginning about taxes. And I remember my first year of, being a business, and I went to my accountant and I was like just sitting there like, oh my gosh, like I know nothing about this. So it's been such a journey of learning that, but if I could have my time again, I'd learn that sooner. You know, what are some of the mistakes that you've made in your business journey? I always find it really insightful to kind of unpack those and see what you've changed as a result of that.
Well, I'm in year 10 now, I think, of quitting my job or after quitting my job. So it was summer 2016 or 17. I can't remember. Anyway, like I had to then, start from zero and build from nothing with all the things that I've done, which has been great because it's given me a lot of a lot of lessons. But you underestimate like how long it may take, depending on what it is that you're building. But just with everything, my mate was saying the other day, oh, they're having trouble with their kids, and like someone older was like, oh, don't worry, it doesn't last forever, probably only the next couple of years. And they're like, another 2 years, but the parent who's been through the journey is and done it multiple times is like, ah, you'll be all right, it's only 2 years. And it's a bit like that in business where you're kind of going, sheesh, like, can we get some more wins? Like, is this gonna happen a bit faster? And often I think what we do is we, if we, especially if we quit our job and go into business, we think, well, I'm earning 60 grand, 70, 80 grand in my job. That's what I want to be able to make in business. But we forget, yeah, but you went to school, high school, uni, got the degree and did 5 years in that job to make the 80K. And you want to just earn 80 grand in 1 year in business. Do you see the difference? And so I think people forget that a lot, that it may take time. And I think you can get there a lot faster than the career model, but you've really got to be doing something that the market wants. So that brings me to the second point would be like, it's very easy in life to think, oh, because I like this, other people will. But yeah, you'll probably always find some people who will, but people will try and sell things that the market doesn't want. But because they want to and because they like it, they think everybody else should. But really, the market, like business works on the market, giving you the feedback and telling you what it wants. And that's where I think a lot of people fail. And then they go, oh, I tried business. It's too hard. It doesn't work. And customers are assholes and it's really hard. And you kind of go, well, you were trying to sell something that it didn't want. And then further from that, the market's always changing. So when the market's really frothy, business is easier. When it's not, then it's harder. And you then have to get better. And if you're not willing to get better, then it can stagnate. And so one thing a mentor said to me very early on was like, you've got to constantly be looking at the version of the business owner that you need to be and working on that person. And that's how you build a better business, because that person builds a better business. So to give a practical example, like if you have struggles around having money conversations, well, if someone owes you money, you're probably going to find it really awkward to ring that person and say, hey, you haven't paid this invoice. But the person who could run the business better that doesn't have cash flow issues because they don't let people not pay them would say, oh, that's something I now have to work on. Yeah, I do struggle to have conversations about money, but that's irrelevant. I have to solve that. So I've got to become somebody who doesn't. And then that person then messages the person and say, hey, we noticed you haven't paid. Can we please get commitment of what date you'll have paid that by? Is there any reason you haven't? And bang, you've sent it. And because you've become somebody different, you're willing to do what the other version of you wouldn't have done. So that's what I love about business, is it forces you to constantly iterate. But back to the mistake, like the mistake is not doing that, right? And just basically, oh, I should just be able to be the same person. So you've said this a lot in construction, is that construction turned down, or it's cooked, the economy's cooked, this government's cooked it. No, the last government cooked it. I'm going to Australia. What have you done to get some more work? Oh, what do you mean? Like, it's always word of mouth. Well, great in a booming economy, maybe not in a recession, brother. We might have to go knock on some doors. I'm not knocking on a door. Who's doing that? Someone that doesn't want to be broke. Okay. Oh, so yeah, have you handed any flyers out? No, that doesn't work. Or have you done it? No. Well, so how do you know it doesn't work? So, people are very good at telling you like why something can't happen. But the beauty when you run an accounting practice is you have clients that are both struggling and successful, and you get to then teach the ones who are struggling, like, oh, hey, in your industry, this is working. You could try that. And often, like unless they're willing to do it, then we can't get enough data to see like, will it work for them? But people often get frustrated by other client, well, people who are doing well and think there must be something else. There must be this shiny object. But often it is just volume and doing more of what is already working and less of what isn't. So I think, being distracted by shiny objects and the latest thing can be a real desire for business owners as well, because they probably are a bit more entrepreneurial and looking for the next thing to do. But if you keep fiddling with things in your business that you don't actually need to be in there and the market doesn't need, you can lose a lot of time in there as well.
This is I'm loving this so much. I'm like here taking notes. You're like truly evidence that you can build wealth even if you start in financial struggle, start off in credit card debt, all of the different things. What would you say are some like key action steps that someone can take if they've got a goal of becoming a millionaire, but they're very much at that starting point, possibly in debt, just getting started. What would some key steps they need to take to overcome this?
Well, I would start with a pad and pen, and I would, and this is the stuff that I used to do. And I would go, yeah, I know I'm broke at the moment, but this is just the chapter, whatever, but I'm going to be here for some time. And this is actually, writing down what it is that you actually want to achieve. And, it might be a millionaire, but then unpacking that, being like, okay, if I was a millionaire, what would that mean to me? Because there's probably, when we say I want to be a millionaire, what I've come to learn is it's typically there's reasons in there. So it's like, why is that? And if we can find our reasons, then it's easier for us to remember those when times are harder and when things aren't happening for us. And I think if we then know where we're going, now we know where we don't want to be, because we're even doing this exercise to start with. I want to be over here, but I'm currently here. So for me, it was credit card debt, but I wanted to have shares and I wanted to have more money and earn more and have more choices and not be frustrated by things I was doing. And so I had my frame of reference of like, I don't want this anymore. And then I had my, okay, well, I want this. I didn't know how to do this. I didn't know how to be the millionaire. I thought I sort of did, but I didn't realize how, much work it was going to take. But this, I knew what I needed to do. Change my habits, get rid of the credit card, pay the money back, give the bank their money back, change who I am, unsubscribe from emails, say no more. And okay, I'll start by changing those habits and I can get back to a baseline. My baseline is, whew, I owe no one any money. I have no assets, but I have no liabilities. Great, I'm back to basically where I was born. What the hell? And now I get to go after my big goals. But in that time, I'm learning more about, okay, what are these people doing over here? How am I going to do it? And how can I keep that belief going in me? But what I think a lot of people do at this stage is, oh, hey, bro, what are your thoughts on Tesla stocks? Why? Oh, because I'm thinking about, investing a bit into them. Oh, okay, but you owe 4 grand. Like, should we just tidy up the 4 grand to start with? Now I'm the dickhead, right? Like, boring. There must be a faster way. There's got to be a shortcut. Oh, have you heard about XRP? You get into XRP. Shouldn't we just pay the debt back? So, like, do the thing is what I'm always trying to encourage people to do. Like, do it, because then it's done. Because all that's going to happen is your XRP 10x's randomly, your Tesla does, or whatever. And then it's like, oh, I don't need to pay back my debt anymore because I'm using debt arbitrage. And I figured out that there's actually better to have the debt because the debt's low cost and I can actually get a better return on it. Oh, I'm going to get this AI stock next as well. And then I heard about it and you go, oh, God, right. Pay the debt back, like do the thing. So I think that's the cycle. And I think a lot of young lads struggle with this as well, especially boy lads like 20s. Oh, hey bro, I'm gonna self-manage my KiwiSaver. Why, man? You read one book on investing and now you want to, I'm like, focus on increasing your income, but we're always looking for how can I get to that millionaire status or the output like faster. And so why I guess I'm trying to drill into people there is like, we all do that and it's normal, but just try and turn it down. I get messages all the time. Hey, bro, what are your thoughts on this stock? I'm like, I don't have any. Oh, and like, that's my answer now, because I'm like, but years ago, I'd be like, oh, I don't know. I better research it. Like, tell me, what do you know about it? Oh, should I? Now I'm like, oh, bang, another shiny object. Like, Luke, you just need to do podcasts, keep clients happy, send invoices, get paid, do speaking gigs. Get another sponsor, whatever. Like, those are my core things that I need to focus on. And then I don't need to worry about like all the noise from the outside. But you only have that wisdom once you've done more of the things that are working well for you. So again, just to bring it back to a bit more like practical and what people can do, I think tracking what money you have coming in each month and what money you have going out is fundamental. You know, that's people say in business, the number one thing that ruins a business is cash flow. What they mean is they run out of money. Like they don't understand it. Where is the money? It's the same for people in life, but we just don't say that in individual finance. We say, oh, cost of living, you know, this is really expensive. Oh, got this emergency, didn't see that happening. Business has all the same shit, but on like a massive scale. So we have to understand like what we have coming in, what we have going out, and whether that's either increasing our cash bucket or whether it's decreasing it. If it's decreasing it, we've got to tidy that up. And we're either going to have to increase our income or strip some expenses out. Now, because we haven't taught a lot of Kiwi people how to increase income, then the people who are talking about it, scammer, grifter, oh, easy for you to say, oh, privileged, oh, whatever, you know? So now probably delete that lingo and go, okay, that's quite simple. My number isn't big enough. I need to learn how to increase that. That then increases our gap. So we have more coming in than going out. That increases our cash. We're probably going to remove ourselves from like scarcity, survival. Oh, bang, two fillings, 900 bucks. No problem. Got 3 grand set aside. Wicked. Now I'm paying for it. Bang, thank you. See you later. See you next time. Dentist still sucked, but I've paid my 900 bucks. Old version of you is, oh, do you guys take Q card? Sweet. Yeah, great. I can pay it off over 24 months. But then that goes back into the cash flow, 24 payments of, you know, whatever it is to clear the $900. So you've really got to like that simple change of tracking that and then increasing your income and building up a cash buffer completely changes how you run your life. And then tracking assets and liabilities every month. So basically in accounting, same thing. We have a look at what assets do we have, what liabilities do we have. So a big business, for instance, COVID hits, they can go to the bank. Hey, listen, we want to keep all of our staff. We want to keep going. We've got $20 million worth of assets. We've only got $3 million worth of debt. Are you all good to lend us some money against these assets? Yep, we can, because ultimately, if you fail, we'll just sell the assets and we'll get our money back. So we can leverage our balance sheet and we can use that balance sheet to keep our business running. So same principle for it, but for us individually. And when we go and borrow money from the bank for our first property or our property, they're going to say, what's your statement of financial position? And we're going to go, don't know, didn't do accounting. They're wanting to know assets minus liabilities. So it's all this stuff that actually you will have to do in your life. And I think if you track that each month, then you start to see progress. What does our brain love? Progress. Our assets are increasing. Oh, my KiwiSaver is slowly increasing. Oh, my student loan's decreasing a bit. Oh, my buy now, pay later reliance is decreasing. And so you're seeing, oh, my net worth, so assets minus liabilities equals net worth, that's increasing. Every month, we're setting a reminder to do this. We go from not doing this to doing this 12 times in a year. Man, you're going to get your money on your, sorry, your mind on your money so quick, you know, that you're going to become a different person because all of a sudden, you've just added in 12 metrics where you were checking it and having a conversation with yourself and learning more about money. And all of a sudden, people go like, wow, I achieved a lot more because you're actually deliberately, you know, making a choice to do this and keep an eye on it. Whereas the year before, like you didn't do it at all. You just sort of reflect on the end of the year and go, I didn't save much. Oh, well, no emergency happened. That's quite good. I didn't really get a pay rise, or my pay rise only didn't even really cover the cost of living increases. And then you just, the year's gone, you know? So I think some of those like fundamental things, and I still do those. You know, I was doing that. I was tracking my credit card balance decreasing to zero, you know, from back at 13,500 down to zero. And that was me, man. That was just every fortnight. That was all I got to see. It was cool. It's $500 less. Yep, epic. Now, you know, I'm still doing the same practice at you know, the million stage where I'm okay, KiwiSaver, different investments, cash on hand, investments into business, et cetera, and still tracking it. And I think it's been one of the things that I've taught Keep the Change listeners to do that. I get too many messages from people being like, wow, that is that's been a game changer for me. One thing I will add is that, and you probably do this too, like you can ask, well, you can tell people, well, if you want something from me, like, you know, reply training or whatever, a mini chat sends them the thing. The amount of times that the same people ask me for the same resource, I just want to say to them, like, you're not doing it. Like, you're not doing the thing. Like, do the thing. It's like replying to the Keep the Change account or yours and saying, oh, can I have this resource? You know, isn't doing it. Replying and asking for the 7 steps to increase your income and watching it isn't doing it, But that's where I think a lot of people are trapped. They think that by, following me or you or replying to the story or subscribing on YouTube is like, oh, okay, I've done it. It's like, no, that's just the bringing more better information into your world. Now we've got to do what it's actually going to take. So final point being there, like do it. Whatever it is that you need to do that you're frustrated by, like do that. Clear the debt. Stop using buy now, pay later. Learn to increase your income. Review all your finances. Do a budget. Build your assets and liabilities. Like do that, but start there.
You're basically just saying, do the mahi and get the trick, Tete Whanau. Love this.
Sounds like some William Wairua from Palmerston North there. Yeah.
No, one of my favorite ways to in my podcast episodes, which I'm actually really sad to because I've really loved my time with you today and hearing your insights on all of these things, is to end off with a controversial take that you have on things. And I know you're going to nail this because a lot of what you say, I think, to a lot of people is probably quite controversial. So would love to hear this. What's your controversial opinion for the day?
Oh, I think like houses and our obsession with housing in New Zealand's probably caused a lot of the issues that we have today. And this sort of oh, I can just get a cruisy job, buy a property, it'll go up in value, and then I'll be rich. It's just set people up to be very weak versions of what their true potential is. And we got away with it for decades, and then it was okay, well then get a second one, get a third one. But a lot of those people, imagine if they started businesses or if they, thought bigger or if they exported or innovated or they invested money into overseas shares that returned better than property anyway. Oh, but what about leverage? There's just, I've seen all the defenses for all this stuff. I think the country is better off for having me do what I do than if I decided to be a property investor. Okay, that's probably another way to explain it. And we sent so many people down the property investment route, and now we're paying the price for it. Like, we've got to teach people how to be entrepreneurial. We've got to start questioning how much money, governments are creating and spending. We've got to look at whether the education we have is fit for purpose. We've got to challenge people that say, not everyone can be a business owner. Well, not everyone can be an employee. Not everyone can be on the benefit either. So now what? Oh, not everyone can, do. Oh, so it's weird that it becomes so normalized to be like job, property, shut your mouth, and then coast to the finish line. Like, we need, people coming through doing different things, warning us, like, hey, this AI thing's over here. How are we using that? Hey, we can export to the world. That's possible. We could be doing that, but we haven't been taught how to. And I think those people, are very needed. And I think it has shifted, but I do think part of me might just be blind to the fact we've had a pretty flat property market for the last few years, and so we've had a bit of this like quieting down on the property side. But to explain this like simply, in 2020 and in 2021, when the world is like, whoa, we've got a pandemic on our hands, you can't go to work. You got to wear a mask. You need to be injected with this. You can't go to the supermarket. I'm going to hoard all this toilet paper and stuff. Like, it was a very strange time, right? And Kiwi people were like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go to an open home and buy a property. I'm just going to like bid the price up. And oh, what the hell are we doing? Like, but that's what we were doing because we're just so obsessed. I've got to get a property. I've got to get a property. And I think that's, yeah, I think we're really paying for the paying the price for that, as a country. And yeah, I don't know what the answer is or the solution, but I think if we can get people to the mode of right, like chase your thing. It doesn't need to be like leverage the sheesh out of yourself and get as much debt as you can to get as much property as you can. There is so much leverage in the world in different ways now, whether it's investing into companies that are doing things that we can't do, whether it's learning to leverage an audience, whether it's education, whether it's exporting into different countries, leverage is a lot more than, people say, like, what about leverage when it comes to property? It's like, yeah, but what about leverage in all the other areas of life? What about getting 1% better each day? That's also really valuable to do. So I think maybe the controversial take is that property has been great for a lot of people to build wealth on paper, but now we're going to see, the end of that experiment of doing that at such large scale. And there's a lot of baby boomers that have no money, in their hand, but they have a lot of wealth tied up in their property. And that experiment, we're gonna have to watch, okay, was that smart? Was it not? And for some numbers on that, there's about $1.6 billion, $1.6 trillion tied up in property. And then there's about $250,000 worth of like term deposits. Both two very safe investments that people have been taught in New Zealand, right? The NZX 50, the value of that is like $170 billion. Like our biggest companies are not even worth what people have, in term deposits in New Zealand, because we're so risk averse. And I think that's my lesson for a lot of people, is that you've been taught to be risk averse. You've been taught to not take any risks. Like, who taught you that and why? And if you took a bit more risk, and calculated risk, like, who could you be? Who could you become? What could you do for your whānau? What could you do for your community? What could you do for the country? And I think that's better than earn a bit more, get some more debt, and buy another property.
I love this so much. And, my mindset on this is like, at the end of the day, we're literally all going to die. So, we can t use our life as we please, but taking risks and learning from, things that didn't work out and everything like that. And, it pays off in the long run. So, love this so much. This is so inspiring, so powerful. And I'm really grateful for your time today. I know you're a busy man. So, I'm definitely going to link your podcast and Instagram in the description down below for anyone you guys need to check out his page. But if is there anything else that you'd like to leave the audience with before we wrap up?
Like, one thing I guess that, like, I've seen over the years, and I grew up in Dannevirke, for instance, and my dad's from Rotorua. Like, I think for some reason, like, Māori and Pacifica have been led to believe, like, for some of them, like, that it can't be them. And I kind of think, like, it can, and there are a lot of people doing really well. And yeah, like, a lot of things start with what we tell ourselves and our belief. So, what I love about what you're doing in, like, your book, for instance, you're just like drilling into people, like, it could be you, it could be you. But if you don't believe that it can be, then you're gonna then go like, what's that? Sorry?
You will be right.
Yes, 100%. And then it's like, oh, well, I knew I was right because society did this to me. But then you can see somebody who is doing well, but is in the same position. So I think for, like, Māori and Pacifica people especially, because, like, a lot of people look at me and think, okay, white boy, like, rich white boy now. So I can't relate to some people, and, like, a lot of women, for instance, as well, be like, oh, you're never talking about what a solo mother could do. So then I'll create some content from a solo mother, and it's like, oh, I'll just ignore that anyway, because I just wanted to tell you that I can't relate to you. But
Can I stop you for a second? Because when you said that, I'm like, that actually used to be me. Like on when I saw your content, when I first found it, I actually thought that, and that was my mindset a lot of the time. Like, no, Pākehā can do X, Y, Z. They have so many privileges, which is true, but in the same way, it's like, it was after actually accepting that my life isn't going to change if I don't actually change anything. And so over time, I'm actually like, that is actually so flawed. If you actually look at your content, if I actually read or actually listen to your podcast, which at the beginning I didn't, I was like, nah, Pākehā, like he won't know. He doesn't know my struggle. He doesn't know all of the things. And so yeah, a bit of a vulnerable share on the podcast. But honestly, that was my first opinion. But over time, I'm like, oh my gosh, he's awesome.
Well, honestly, like, and I think we all do it. I had my years of doing that too. Like, oh, this person won't understand, and easy for them to say, and whatever. And we just choose, like, who those people are to then dismiss. But what I was going to say is, like, if you are caught there, and if it's not going to be me, or if it's not going to be you, or, like, whatever, find somebody that it is. Because, I got a lot of successful, women that I talk to, a lot of successful female clients. And then I'll have people like, oh, it's harder for women. I'm like, oh, do you want to have a chat to this weapon? Up to you. I got a lot of successful, like, Māori and Pacifica people that I can have a chat to as well, and be like, okay, how do you see this? What could I be missing here? So what I've come to learn is that, like, successful people eventually break through that too, and they acknowledge what you just said before, that there are these things that hold people back. But then they go, okay, well, I'm going to be aware of those, but I'm not going to let them stop me, and I'm going to, find somebody, who is breaking that norm. And I'm not going to look for why it can't be them. Oh, yeah, different iwi. No, what are you doing, man? Like, first the objection was, okay, it's a white person. Now it's like, oh, you know, so the brain will constantly find reasons for you that it can't be you, when really, like, there's evidence all around us that it can be. And I think if we can just flip our mind a little bit to that, you know, because people would say to me, you know, like, people sometimes say, oh, wow, you've done so well for coming from Dannyburg. And I'm like, what the hell? Like, what do you mean? But you know, it is, there was a stereotypical, like, oh, people from small, or even come to Auckland, it was like, oh, I didn't go to any of these flash schools or these private schools and stuff. And I heard all business happens and all the, you know, that's, I was like, oh, I just probably need to meet some of those people and break into them. Like, I can't change and go back and, oh, can I come to the school now? You know, it's just gone. So I had to go, oh, okay, what am I going to do? Like, yeah, I don't know any of those. I don't even know the names of these private schools. So then how am I going to, you know, how am I going to find a way to, you know, still make it work for me? Or, oh, you're too young to start an accounting practice, mate. You know, you probably need to do a bit more time before you can do that. I'm like, oh, but if I believe that that was true, I probably would go back and go and get a job. All that's happened is we've picked up clients that are around our age and they love dealing with us. So, yeah, but they don't say that stuff once you've done it. They say it before you do it. So
Yeah.
that's why it's really important to look at the people who have done stuff and get your advice from them.
Oh my gosh, this was absolute gold. I am so grateful for your time today. Oh my gosh, so many nuggets in here. Obviously going to link all your links down below, but yeah, thank you for your time today. So grateful and just can't wait to see what comes out of Keep the Change this year.
No worries. Thank you, and keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you so much.